Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DC Insider Employer Update. I'm your host, Peter Waltz. The DC Insider Employer Update brings you the current insights and expertise of the Washington, D.C.-based attorneys from Fortney Scott. Each episode will highlight the most important updates and analysis that employers need to know in order to understand and react to key federal developments affecting their business. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as legal advice on any subject matter. Welcome to this opening series of the podcast, The First 100 Days of the Biden Administration, a weekly update that will provide key takeaways for employers resulting from the dramatic changes in Washington occurring under the Biden administration. Joining us in today's episode are three lawyers from Fortney Scott who bring special familiarity with the workings of Congress and the federal agencies. David Fortney, a former acting solicitor of the Department of Labor, co-founder of the Institute for Workplace Equality, and co-founder of Fortney Scott. Bert Fishman, a former deputy solicitor of labor for national operations and a perennial DC super lawyer in labor and employment. And Nita Beecher, who brings a unique blend of experience as an in-house counsel, an executive with a leading employer network, and now as a member of the firm. So welcome, everybody. Let's jump right in. We've got a lot to cover. So since the Biden administration began on January 20th, the news has been filled daily with headlines and stories about many changes in development. David, I'd like to start with you. Can you start off by identifying the key developments that impact employers during the first 45 days of the Biden administration?
Thanks, Peter. More than anything, it's, I think, the speed that President Biden has really taken control of Washington. Gosh, he's issued over 30 executive orders, 9 presidential memoranda, 6 declarations, and that was just in his first 72 hours on the job. He's pursued his promised agenda. So this is not any sort of bait and switch situation. He has focused on COVID. He said that that would be effectively job one. He's made that his priority. He also has focused on nominating and securing the confirmation of his cabinet and has been making strong progress on that. And importantly, from his perspective, he did not allow either the unprecedented insurrection or the impeachment trial to intervene with that. So clearly, President Biden has marked out a completely different, empathic tone and a new direction that is clearly and overtly pro-worker and pro-union. Indeed, I would have to say Biden does not need any on-the-job training. You know, he was vice president for 8 years and ran in the Senate for 37 years, and he's kind of flexing those muscles that he's got.
There's no training wheels on this president. He seems to have that well under control. Let's talk about some of these executive orders. Nita, one of the initial developments David mentioned were all the executive orders that have happened. Are there executive orders that are particularly significant for employers?
There are actually three, I believe. The first one was an executive order combating racism. And in that executive order, President Biden eliminated the executive order that President Trump had issued against certain kinds of diversity training. That particular Trump's diversity training executive order had caused a lot of consternation in the federal contractor community. So that's now been eliminated. Another one that was also issued on his very first day was in support of the LGBTQ community, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of that later on. And the most recent one that was issued on International Women's Day has established in the White House Gender Policy Council that will be looking across the government, the military, and foreign policy as well to eliminate discrimination and to promote gender equity and equality, which I think is incredibly important on many aspects and will impact employers moving forward.
Bert, let's bring you into the conversation. Are there additional actions that President Biden has done during the first weeks that you think are particularly significant?
Well, yeah, especially if you're going to be a policy wonk, which I am. One other significant development, virtually on day one, was the presidential memo freezing all pending regulations. And going beyond the importance of any particular frozen reg, this memo clearly signaled that there was a new team in town. Also, nearly 20% of those 30 early executive orders were all aimed at returning order to the regulatory process. a number of the Trump executive orders either limited the number of regulations or undermined the effectiveness of the regulatory process. Those were all dispatched by the new administration, as I say, virtually on the first day, which means get ready. Employers, soon you will be subjected to new regulations, opinion letters, guidances, directives, you name it. And you can sense that change by looking at the people President Biden has nominated or appointed. They all have significant experience in government and in regulating, and they're all supportive of the interest of organized labor.
Well, let's talk about some of these people, David, if you can. Who are the key new appointees by the Biden administration, and who's going to have the greatest impact on employers in the workplace?
Well, I think on the top of that list, we have to put Marty Walsh. He is the nominee to head the Labor Department, to become the Secretary of Labor. And his confirmation is widely expected. It's going to be bipartisan. And interestingly, Walsh, who is now leaving his current position as the mayor of the city of Boston, is a card-carrying member of the union, of the building trades. And Walsh was the choice of big labor. By big labor, I mean the AFL-CIO, organized labor. And his appointment really makes clear, in every sense of the word, this administration is unabashedly in the corner and prepared to advocate for the interests of big labor. And Walsh is certainly going to bring that to bear. That's where he comes from, and that's what he's done successfully in Boston. There are going to be additional key appointments, certainly within his department, within the Labor Department, that we anticipate will be announced shortly after Walsh is confirmed. And that includes who the general counsel will be, known as the Solicitor of Labor, the head of the Wage and Hour Administration, which is very important, and the head of OSHA. In the meantime, a number of key actions by those agencies are poised and ready to deploy, and we expect all those to start rolling out almost immediately after Marty Walsh is confirmed. So clearly, as Bert indicated, new personnel do translate to new policies and new directions.
Well, Nita, jump back in here. What other key personnel appointments are there that are going to be significant for employers?
Well, two come to mind right away. The first is Merrick Garland, who's been nominated as the Attorney General. He is expected to be confirmed in the next week or so. Under his leadership, you will see the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division to become much more active in its traditional role at the forefront of social justice issues, which is one of the pillars of this administration. The second is Susan Rice. She's the new head of the Domestic Policy Council. That position is now a cabinet position. She will not be a figurehead. She's already announced that she'll be addressing social justice issues across the government, both the policies and the practices in the government and in society at large. This has been reinforced today with the executive order on gender equality and equity, both in the United States and across the world.
So, Nita, that sounds like a lot of musical chairs are making a lot of big changes in Washington. Well, let's turn to another critical area that we've identified, which is how the Biden administration is addressing the COVID pandemic and its impact on the workforce. David, I want to go back to you on this. As of today, what are the key takeaways for employers?
The president has made clear that addressing COVID remains the first priority. In terms of government action, we are expecting that by mid-March, OSHA will issue what's called an emergency temporary standard. That's effectively a regulation, but it doesn't have any advance notice or publication or comment period. And under this emergency standard, there'll be new COVID obligations focusing on worker protections, record keeping, and governmental reporting. This new standard will effectively impact every employer in the United States with 15 or more employees. In fact, we understand the new standard is already written. They're polishing that draft, getting it finalized as we speak here, and it's going to be issued in the very near future. In addition to providing the new mandates under the emergency temporary standard, Secretary of Labor Walsh is expected to also implement a much more beefed up OSHA presence, more boots on the ground, more money towards enforcement, and much more rigorous attention paid to investigating complaints, doing on-site inspections, and really writing up enforcement where appropriate.
Let's jump over now to this COVID relief bill that's going to impact employers and workers. Bert, fill us in on that. What's the latest there?
Well, hot off the press, on a straight party vote and by means of procedure called budget reconciliation, the COVID relief bill passed the Senate over the weekend on a 50-49 vote, and we anticipate it'll be passed by the House this week. And that means that millions of people will soon receive a $1,400 stimulus check. Millions of others will receive extended supplemental unemployment benefits. State and local governments will share $350 billion. There'll be additional funding for child care. Additional funding will also have been provided specifically to assist in the manufacture and distribution of vaccines and PPE. There's even an eviction moratorium, and there's relief on student loans. So it's a kind of clean sweep. The president just got everything he wanted, except for the increase of the minimum wage to $15.
Well, wait a second. I thought the $15 minimum wage was a principal goal of the administration, wasn't it?
It still is, Peter. One of the problems is they're going to have to come at it a different way. They may have a new standalone bill. It might be an amendment to a must-pass tax bill, even an executive order that would phase in $15 per hour minimum wage for federal contractors. It's not going to go away, even though they didn't get it passed this time.
Well, I think that's for sure, Anita. Seems like that's the case as he moves forward. David, let's go beyond COVID relief a little bit. What else is coming back down the track here? Are there any other proposed bills that employers need to know about?
Boy, there sure are. It's almost a grab bag of legislation that particularly organized labor and worker advocates have been proposing and seeking. The first and foremost, the one that's received a lot of attention, again, is one of the AFL-CIO's top priorities. It's called the PRO Act, or the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. And this bill has already passed the House, and the bill hits really every item on organized labor's top agenda. It expands the right to organize. It increases penalties for opposing union organization. It reduces the number of independent contractors and makes more individual workers employees subject to being organized. But for all those reasons that it garnered unanimous support within the House are the same reasons that it's less than clear that it will ever be able to succeed in the U.S. Senate without significant amendments and changes. Now, there's additional legislation, too. There's the Paycheck Fairness Act, which amends the Equal Pay Act. So that's both an employment bill as well as a social justice initiative, as Anita has mentioned. That same bill has also been proposed a number of times in prior Congresses, but it, to date, has never garnered enough support to be enacted. We understand and anticipate that the president will soon be announcing an infrastructure bill. This is going to be a major initiative, and we will really put to the test whether the parties can find a way of reconciling and seeing whether they can move forward. There is actually a consensus that there is very broad need for an infrastructure bill. The infrastructure bill will include prevailing wage and many of the attributes that organized labor favors. The question is whether the bill will be opposed as being further deficit spending, or whether enough Republicans will join with the Democrats, and whether the president will be able to keep his left flank in line, because whether it's enough to satisfy them. But what we've seen so far, President Biden seems to be able to pull together a lot of those varied interests. But the infrastructure bill, even though these other bills are pending, we actually expect the infrastructure bill to be the next major piece of legislation that we will see moving.
Wow, David, quite a handful there. Let's touch on one of those items. You were talking about social justice initiatives. So, Anita, fill us in here. Is there any legislation proposed on that specific front?
There are a number. The most important one is a Voting Rights Act, H.R. 1, For the People Act. It's a Voting Rights Act which would reverse recent Supreme Court decisions that have undercut the ability of people to vote. The president's also already announced an immigration reform bill. It would have an 8-year path to citizenship for law-abiding, undocumented residents, including Dreamers, and a more liberal green card and visa procedures than those under the prior administration. And as we mentioned earlier, there's the Equality Act, which would broadly guarantee LGBTQ rights across not just Title VII, but a number of other laws, and would close the loophole that the Bostock case left open for religious discrimination.
So it sounds like social justice will continue to be a central theme of the administration. Bert, let's go back to you. Are there other civil rights efforts that impact employers and workforces specifically?
Well, I think they are, but they're somewhat quieter, and you have to look a little bit deeper. For example, the government has already withdrawn lawsuits challenging the admissions practices at Yale and ended an investigation at Princeton, and it will staunchly defend the status quo in college admissions if and when the famous Harvard case gets to the Supreme Court.
Wait a second, Bert. Do you think the Supreme Court is going to revisit affirmative action in college admissions?
Well, nobody bets on the Supreme Court, but there is a new majority, and you only need four votes to get cert, that is to be heard by the court. And there may be interest among the three new justices to have their views heard. And the important thing is that a new ruling on the role of race in college admissions would influence a wide range of employment-related matters. So we're all looking carefully to see what happens there.
Nita, why don't you jump in on this with respect to race and discrimination issues? Are there developments in the federal EEO agencies during the first weeks of the Biden administration?
Well, there's clearly new leadership, both at EEOC and at the Labor Department's Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, or OFCCP. That agency enforces federal contractors' EEO and affirmative action obligations. At EEOC, President Biden appointed Charlotte Burroughs as the EEOC chairman and just fired the Republican-appointed general counsel, Sharon Gustafson. This move, as Bert will talk about in a little bit, is similar to what happened to the NLRB general counsel, and it's just as unprecedented. It never happens. The OFCCP is now headed by former chair of EEOC, Jenny Yang. We expect them to be incredibly active. They've already discontinued focused reviews moving forward. Those addressed employers' obligations involving disability, veterans, and religious protections in the workplace. We anticipate that the agency will expand enforcement directed at race and gender discrimination from recruiting to promotion to terminations, as outlined in President Biden's executive orders. And there will be a continuing focus on pay discrimination, including, we expect, collecting pay compensation from employers, just as Ms. Yang did when she was chair of the EEOC. There are going to be a lot of changes for federal contractors, especially if President Biden can't get legislation through Congress.
Well, let's talk a little bit about wage and hour enforcement. We know that that's always a critical area for employers. Bert, can you jump in here? What kind of activity have we seen in this area?
Well, this is the area for most employers, that, to use an old phrase, the big enchilada. The Department of Labor has already started expanding the coverage of the wage and hour laws for gig workers, and it's changing the rules addressing independent contractors and joint employers. The Trump administration issued joint employer regulations, but the courts have frozen those, and the DOL has already sent a new joint employer regulation to the White House. And a new independent contractor regulation has just been announced as being in the works. So within the next 90 days, there will be further developments on both fronts.
So, Bert, in addition to wage and hour agency issues, can you update us on the latest developments at the NLRB?
Yes, I can, because the agency is in turmoil. It relates back to the wage and hour because the NLRB has its own independent contractor regulations and its own joint employer regulations. But those are all in limbo now because the president fired the general counsel, Peter Robb, which was unprecedented. And the acting general counsel will soon rescind the famous Uber memo, which made gig workers unable to unionize. But those actions will be challenged because the legitimacy of the Robb termination and all subsequent actions by the general counsel will also be challenged. This turmoil is certain to affect the confirmation of the newly nominated general counsel, Jennifer Robruso, and it will also affect the confirmation of new board members coming through the next 2 years. In fact, the famous and well-known union election at Bessemer for Amazon Warehouse is also implicated because the general counsel has to certify that election. And no matter what the outcome is, that certification will also be challenged. So keep your eye on the NLRB.
Wow, that's exciting times across the radar here. And it sounds like lots of things are percolating to the top. But let's talk about what's still under the radar. David, can you tell us any significant actions for employers that we don't necessarily see? They're flying a little bit blind right now. Fill us in on that, if you would.
Sure. I think the one that we're certainly watching and frankly worried about is what is called a blacklisting concept. And this is a concept that was first rolled out during the Obama administration. It was roundly criticized by the business community and ultimately successfully set aside. But in a nutshell, what it does, it looks at federal contractors and it says that if they have any violations in terms of EEO laws or labor laws or anything, that it could impact their government contracts. That's one. And then the second, and they kind of go hand in glove, you know, putting greater burdens and accountability on the federal contractor community, is that to the extent the legislative initiatives that we've discussed here today, like the $15 minimum wage, some of these other EEO social justice changes, cannot be fully codified in Congress, the president can impose all of those obligations on federal contractors. And that can be done simply through the stroke of a pen by signing an executive order saying in the future, federal contractors will do X. And they promulgate regulations and it goes forward like that. So I think the role of federal contractors and the potential pending, really explosive expansion of their obligations is really a big item that's under the radar.
Wow. What an overview, folks. I mean, we've covered a ton of ground here. Let's end the program by just one key takeaway for employers from each of you. Bert, let's start with you. What's your takeaway?
I would say watch the upcoming staff at the Department of Labor. As we mentioned earlier, personnel is policy.
Nita, what about you? What's on your plate?
Federal contractors are in the bullseye, and OFCCP is and will be stepping up its enforcement.
And last but not least, David, what's your hot topic?
Well, Pete, I'd have to say that COVID is going to continue to be the single greatest challenge that employers face. And that upcoming emergency temporary standard that OSHA is going to issue is going to have a major impact on the workplace.
Well, as a first episode of the podcast, we've covered a tremendous amount of ground. It's been a great start. And all your shared knowledge will help our listeners better understand what the developments in Washington mean for their companies. So thanks, everybody. We look forward to our next update. For those that would like to connect with David, Bert, or Nita, or any of the lawyers from Fortney Scott, just reach out to them directly by visiting fortneyscott.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to this DC Employer Update podcast to receive update alerts and tune into the next episode of the first 100 days of the Biden administration. Fortney Scott is also the creator of the DC Insider Report that provides detailed developments with the Biden-Harris administration. To get your copy, as well as future updates, please use the link in the description of this podcast or email your request directly to info@fortneyscott.com. I'm Pete Waltz. Thanks for listening.